Welcome to the Arlington Street Church podcast. Founded in 1729, Arlington Street continues today as a gathering place for progressive people of faith in the greater Boston area and beyond. We are located at the corner of Arlington and Boylston Streets, across from the Public Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. Please visit ascboston.org for more information about this historic Unitarian Universalist congregation. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.
Our reading this morning is from Rosemary Wattala Traumer, Mycelial. Now I understand how grief is like a mushroom, how it thrives in dark conditions, how it springs directly from what is dead. Such a curious, blossoming thing, how it rises and unfurls in spontaneous burgeoning, a kingdom all its own. Like a mushroom, most of grief is never seen. It grows and expands beneath everything. Sometimes it stays dormant for years. Grief, like a mushroom, must be almost unbearably beautiful, even exotic, delicate, veiled, can arrive in any shape and hue. It pulls me closer in. Like a mushroom, grief asks me to travel to regions of shadow and dim. I am astonished by what I find: mystery, abundance, insight. Like a mushroom, grief can be wildly generative. Not all growth takes place in the light. Not all growth takes place in the light. In any given year, on the night of December 21st, sometimes a day or two before and a day or two after, through a pretty wide swath of West Asia that includes Iran, Afghanistan, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, Azerbaijan, and Turkmenistan, you'll find people gathered around a table brimming with dates, sweets, nuts, pomegranates, and watermelon. Candles are lit to illuminate photos of ancestors, while whatever musicians might have shown up at the party pull out their sitars and guitars and hand drums, and they play underneath poems recited by heart. Storytellers get going, and for the most familiar stories, the crowd joins in, taking over with a side note or anecdote to spice things up for a little bit before handing the floor back to the original storyteller. These are both ancient myths told in verse and personal memories of the old days. Both are embellished with time, never told exactly the same way twice. If last year the story of Granddad's run-in with the thief in the bazaar ended in him apprehending the scoundrel by tripping him with a cane, within 5 years, you can bet that the story will be that Granddad was a secret jiu-jitsu master who took him down with a brilliant sweeping kick, landing full upright, not even out of breath. It's that kind of an evening. Sometimes, as the party is well underway, a copy of the mystic poet Hafez's Divan appears. These are conversations between Hafez, his spiritual teacher, perhaps his earthly lovers, and the heavenly beloved, God. The poems are in couplets known as ghazals, and the host, or the host's designee, asks who would like to have their fortune read. And when that person has identified themselves, they come forward to the volume of Hafez, open it to a random page, and point out a couplet. That couplet becomes the riddle that predicts their fate for the coming year. Drown your old sorrow with ancient wine, for this is the seed of happiness. The village elder said so, is one fortune. Don't rely on the wind, even if it blows in your favor. This was the advice the aunt gave to Solomon, reads another riddle. And yet another, the candle wanted to reveal the secret of my seclusion. Thank God that the secret in its heart burned its tongue. These are some of the fortunes told on the night of Shabbat Yalda for Persians, the modern version of the Zoroastrian festival marking the turning of the earth toward the light, the victory of light over darkness. Yalda means rebirth, and sometimes it's translated actually as nativity. It commemorates the birth of the angel of light, Mithra. Now, the origins of Yalda predate Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, but they set up this cultural and religious backdrop for the dualistic fight between good and evil, named light and darkness, that plays out in all of our Abrahamic faiths. You may not have ever heard of Yalda until just now, but you are likely not a stranger to that practice of naming good, light, and dark evil. And this time of year, we and everyone else in the Northern Hemisphere do all we can to shut out the dark, to add a glow and a cheer to everything, to distract ourselves with parties and with planning our resolutions for the new year. And we tell ourselves we must do all of these seasonal rituals. The tree needs to be bought, the lights must be hung, the cookies baked, even if we're really not feeling it. We surround ourselves with examples of the perfection of joy and merriment, hoping some might rub off, diving in full force just to shut out the alternative. All of this is meant to steel us against the threat of being overcome by a night that, despite all evidence to the contrary, may not end this time. In the midst of all of our tidings of comfort and joy, anyone who isn't feeling entirely or even slightly holly jolly is in a tough spot. It's an open secret that loneliness and sadness and grief are some of the most pervasive emotional realities this time of year. And yet we find ourselves set apart from the merriment of the season by less than joyous feelings. It in fact takes some courage to find a quiet moment with a friend or a family member, even a minister or a therapist, to say, I am really struggling. The natural world's lesson for this time of year, though, is very different. As the supposedly most sophisticated species on the planet, you know, the ones that think about meaning in life and worry about things we can't control, who have sent people to space and who spend too much time scrolling on our phones, we superior beings have often assumed that whatever we have cooked up as the explanations for things are, in fact, the truth with a capital T. We've observed how the light changes and felt all of our feelings about that. Going back millennia, we've come up with explanations that have to do with those big sources of evil and good duking it out in a cosmic battle. And so, we hide ourselves in the dark. We hide the riches that can come from the darkness. We end up with alone with our need to learn from and to dwell for a while with the less joyous feelings. And we separate ourselves with our loss, our grief, our questions about the meaning of it all. You have probably heard, you're probably really well acquainted with the Buddhist story of Kisa Gotami, a woman whose child died of a tragic illness and was unable to accept the loss. So she went from house to house asking people for a cure, for medicine that might bring her child back to life. And she was quite compassionately turned away at each door by people who knew that she just needed to come to terms with this loss. Finally, someone said they knew where she could find some healing medicine and sent her to the Buddha. And the Buddha said he did know the medicine that could help her, but that she would need to collect a handful of mustard seeds. You all know this story, right? She goes from house to house, and the mustard seeds, she knows, are very common in the area, so this should be a snap. It won't take long at all. The catch is that the Buddha says the mustard seeds must come from a household that has not known loss. So she goes faithfully door to door, hoping for this miracle cure, and finds folks are eager to offer their mustard seeds, but there is no one who has not known loss like this. This is a lesson about the impermanence of life, the fact that death comes for everyone, that we all know loss in the Buddhist sense. And it's one of Buddhism's most poignant lessons. But it's one of the lessons that we can also turn so easily back on ourselves, isn't it? Our suffering isn't special, shouldn't be held as greater than anyone else's, so maybe we have to hold it in silence. Someone recently shared with me that they were having a hard time, but not, and I quote, living in a tent in Sudan under the rubble of Gaza, hard time, minimizing their troubles. We all want to grit our teeth through the hard stuff, and that sets us apart. But if we look at what's happening among other species with whom we share this planet, who arguably have more to lose in the turning of the seasons, the capricious changes in the weather, and certainly from the poor choices made by humans, we get a different story. In the darkness, whether of long nights or under the surface of the soil, trees and fungi and other living things communicate with each other. They connect, they draw strength from healing chemicals sent through networks of underground agents. They send their roots deeper into the soil, growing invisibly underground to prepare for shooting up above ground in the spring. They keep tabs on each other, warn each other of danger, of loss, of injury through their chemical output. The cover of night for our friends in the plant world is not a cause for isolation. It's a time for deepening connection, of listening and learning from other species what it will take to survive. It's not a time to be dreaded, but a time of growth and strengthening. A time of beauty, as the poet talks about. So what if we, too, were to honor the fact that real magic happens in these long nights? That in our inward turning to make sense of it all, to learn from the hurts and healings we've experienced each season, to let those connect us in stories of deeper meaning and wider purpose. What if we joined with the natural world and did what it teaches us to do? To get ready for future growth by fortifying our own center. Like plants, we need each other's support. We need the stories, the signals, the witnesses of each other to help us make sense of loss, to turn to ways to hold it and let it inform our growth. We need companions not to distract us with shiny things, but to hold us in the struggle, to show us that it's survivable, to know we are in good company. The gift of the darkness, the work of the night, is to remind us who we are and who we are becoming, to hold us gently in its grasp and whisper the nourishment of wisdom. It is only true anguish if we set ourselves apart, assuming no one will understand, fearing no one will care. Now, the explicit theology of Yalda and so many other solstice celebrations is of a victory lap over darkness. But the celebration itself, the ways we have come together in darkness, give us so much more. The yearning and the ecstatic declarations of poets tell us we're not alone in our suffering. That in fact, Our struggles can give birth to art that can be saving balm for others. And at the very least, and it's a least that's actually quite a lot, our suffering opens our hearts to the suffering of others. Imagine the story of Kisa Gotami, in which she sits and hears the full stories of all of those people she visits. And they create a new kind of community in their grief. And they're also there to celebrate each other's learning and flourishing and growth. The stories we tell and tell again and embellish and delight in their truthiness, if not their accuracy, remind us of who we are and connect us in community. Forest biologist Suzanne Simard writes, "There is no moment too small in the world. Nothing should be lost. Everything has a purpose, and everything is in need of care. This is my creed. Let us embrace it. We can watch it rise. Just like that, at any time, all the time, wealth and grace will soar." My friends, may the work that we undertake through the long nights of winter, the work of grief, the work of hope, of care for one another and connection through the depths of our humanity, may all of that work nourish us for all that is to come. May it strengthen our hearts for the journey and guide us toward more abundant life. May we be astonished by what we find, mystery, abundance, insight, and may we remember, not all growth takes place in the light. Amen. May we carry the love that is the spirit of this congregation. May we reach out to one another in our struggles and in our joys. Help us find nodes of connection, sources of healing, places of growth as we move into this time of so much strife and so much joy. Love is the spirit of this congregation. Let it hold you until we meet again. Keep this faith, beloveds, and pass it on. The service begins when the service ends.
Please visit ascboston.org for more information about this historic Unitarian Universalist congregation. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.